Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. Hour number two begins right now. Text line, if you want to be in touch with the show, hit me up there, 251-343-0106. Still come on the program, Danny Garrett. That's in about a half hour from now. He is a lawmaker from Jefferson County. He'll make time for us. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, Will Hampson from P2 Public Affairs will make time for us, as he does every Tuesday. And there's some national elections coming up today, this evening, as we kind of wind down the 2026 Democrat and Republican primary seasons. There's a real chance tonight that Trump takes an L in South Carolina with the runoff between Darlene Graham and Ralph Norman. Keep hearing that. I think that, you know, and the media are going to make a big deal about this. The media are going to make a big deal about it. And Trump just doesn't have the sway that he used to have. That's such a unique circumstance, and you know, evaluating South Carolina in the same way we would, it's akin to Alabama, and you know, I think what's going to happen is the real tell here will be the margins. If it's close or not, Darlene Graham, she's Lindsey Graham, the late Lindsey Graham's sister, she has a very Luther Strange vibe. And in some ways, I mean, even it's very similar to that 2017 episode. Jeff Sessions steps down. To go be AG, Luther Strange is appointed by Bentley. Then Bentley has his problems. He leaves the governor's mansion. It just seemed like here we're going to have a U.S. senator kind of thrust upon us. And he wasn't even that great of a candidate. He had all the smart people and all the consultants. Everything you could ask for, all the money, Donald Trump's endorsement, and people just weren't buying. And similarly in South Carolina, Darlene Graham has all the endorsements, all the money. She just wasn't coached up enough for a U.S. Senate run. And that kind of shows. And I think that's going to be the lesson here. Trump did a rally in Myrtle Beach. Even used some of his own war chest to try to aid in that effort. And this will be a tough loss. It needs to be close to at least, but it just doesn't look like it's going to be. And we'll hear from Will about that later on in the show. That's a big one, just kind of testing, because if we want Trump to have this outsized presence that can help Republicans in this election cycle, well, he's going to have to show something tonight. 251-343-0106. We can roll through some more text here. We got a bunch of them. The Supreme Court has already ruled a transgender, this is from Butter and I, do not have the right to play women's sports. The states get to make that decision. Why is it still an argument? There are no transgender trying to play in WNBA. There's never been a transgender playing in the WNBA trying to make an argument up to save the election. Now, I think it is an interesting test. I don't think it's necessarily tied to the election. But the WNBA has made a stand about transgender athletes. WNBA is just not a very popular, as an entity, not very popular in the eyes of the American public. It's got its defenders, but you see the way some of its star talent's treated. And maybe just some of that is, some of it is just, professional athletes with egos or whatever. Some of it does come off very political. Double standards. And to me, that's maybe it's like professional wrestling in some ways where you have one sort of sympathetic figure or one or two. And then the rest of the league is just stridently out of the sorts with the American culture. And that's what it seems to be to me. As long as they sell tickets. Jason, good morning, Jeff. Coach being the only person other than Trump that Abdul mentioned but named last night means he struck a nerve with the Sharia community, and I like it. It's a cancer, and it has to be addressed. He said he wasn't a very good football coach, was his retort. What does El Saeed know about college football? Ultra Runner, the illogical incoherence of the right is troubling to me. Alabama Democrats pushing for eliminated taxes while the governor and our representatives sing the praise of wealth redistribution. We fight for race blind maps while mandating racial preference commerce. We mock Madami's government-owned grocery stores while buying liquor at our ABC stores. A great point. How do we win over smart young voters when our side is logically incoherent? This is kind of a great exercise here. Alabama Republicans in some ways are dining off national Republicans and what they are perceived to stand for. It's not that Alabama Republicans have all the answers. That, hey, who's saying we need to be more like Alabama? I mean, maybe they are culturally, but no one's looking at the legislature as like, hey, this is how you do it, guys, in Republican Party circles. And that's their meal ticket. That's the way they have been operating. As long as you have that R next to your name, you got cover from whatever's going on in Washington, D.C., whatever Republicans are talking on Fox News. You're one of the same. And that's how you have Democrats coming on this show. We had the lieutenant gubernatorial nominee talking about tax cuts, tax relief. But there's also this, we have a national discussion about tax relief. It's, they just want to cut taxes and give it to the rich and the wealthy. That's what Democrats do. So it becomes kind of a third rail, unfortunately. But it's easy for Democrats to say we're for tax cuts, Ultra Runner, in Alabama, because they don't really get to control much of the purse strings. And they can say, it's not like it's coming out of, our initiatives. It's Republicans who have all these grand visions for society and for government that rely on tax revenue. And they seem to be against the trend in Republican Party politics. They put such an emphasis on this, on the fiscal health. Because there is a distinction here. If you look back when Democrats ran this state, running, you know, into proration every so often, using wish casting type projections to run the state government and then running out of money at the end of the fiscal year. And the one thing Republicans have done different is they've at least said, okay, we're not going to do it that way anymore. But there hasn't been this emphasis on reducing the size of government. It's not this contrast of put more money into the private sector by lowering the tax burden and allowing the economy to thrive. And just in general, reducing the size and scope of government. It's been, we're just going to do it, but it's going to be, we're not going to run out of money. We're not going to do it irresponsibly. We're not going to max out the credit card. Unless you're KIV. But long story short, that logical incoherence, I think, has a lot to do with just some of its power. Democrats, it's easy for Democrats to be against raising revenue when they have no control over it. And just Republicans are able to kind of hitch their wagon to what national Republicans are saying. Unnamed texter. Hi, Jeff. I saw an article at 1819 yesterday about Sheriff Burt saying that they can't continue law enforcement operations at Pritchard without a renewed contract. Does that essentially mean if there's no contract and the criminal activity isn't murder, rape, or assault, then there's nothing, has nothing there to stop it? I mean, that seems to be the case. It's lawless. It's got problems. I don't know what the right answer is. You have this municipality that's kind of running on very limited abilities to maintain law and order. The sheriff just doesn't want the legal liability of not of having to maintain it. The cost. How far away are we from calling in the National Guard into Pritchard if things ever got bad enough? Johnny writes, I do feel like the data thing is a media hysteria. They've been around since the 50s. There was four built under Doug Jones when he was senator. And yeah, I get it. Now they're bigger and they're more advanced, but so is our data. If people actually cared, they'd get off Facebook, get off Instagram, and get off all the social media sites that are the large data collectors. What's all this AI, too? It's not just your marketing preferences. It's the data you need to drive some of these AI applications and all of the different possibilities, all that computing. If we just stopped it, like, I don't know, stop short of what we're doing now, we'd probably be okay. You wouldn't need this, but, you know, like I said, the opposition here that you hear from people is, it's just China. I think the messaging on this is absolutely abysmal. More on that later on in the program. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Still on scene, sadly in search of one step in back of themselves and their slow moving dreams.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. Text line 251-343-0106. Coming up on the program in the next segment, Danny Garrett joins us from Jefferson County, so stick around for that. I'm going to keep rolling through these texts here. Mike, COVID was a huge eye-opener for sure. It proved how easily it has become to call an emergency and turn the population against each other. It's steadily being proven that the majority of the deaths were from treatment or old people who already had one foot in the grave. The whole world essentially was shut down over fears that old or grossly obese people were possibly going to die. I still give a little bit of benefit of the doubt. But I think where you have to end that benefit of the doubt, Mike, was you started seeing other states open up. You started seeing other states not as aggressively promoting the jab, the vaccine. And then they turned out to be fine. But Governor Ivey, I don't know what it was with her. And she's a very petty, vindictive individual. Would not relent. People were saying, the lieutenant governor, members of the Alabama legislature said, hey, it's okay to open things up now. No, I get to make that choice. I'm the governor. And it always kind of struck me as just bad government, but she turns around like a year later, wins her reelection overwhelmingly. No runoff. Two well-funded candidates in the race. There was no pushback. And that's that. These elections have consequences. I said this. Look, if she makes it into the general without a runoff, nothing's going to change because that is a referendum for more of the same. And sure enough, she pulled it out. It's what we voted for. Fire Dog, Canada tariffs hundreds of products made in the United States between 20 and 300%, Trump points out. This is unfair and retaliates, and the Democrats in the world lose their minds. Canada wants to protect their industries. Why can't we? It's. I don't think it's necessarily that. It's just it has an impact on the here and now, the people here. That we're kind of plodding along with the status quo. And then, it's not necessarily about U.S.-Canada relations, although they will make it out to be that. But I think it's some of it is this. It's causing your prices to go up. It's disrupting your life directly when the U.S. does something and Canada reacts. And people just are kind of like, what's going on here? This will not be the last L that Trump will take. Democrats were forced, a different texture here now. Democrats were forced to swallow Kamala Harris. The Republicans will not lay down just to accept Graham. I don't think they will either. Like I said, it feels very Luther Strange. She may have been a good idea at the time, but in practicality, just not ready for the job, at least not ready for a campaign. The saving grace here is it was a flash primary, so they did there weren't a lot of NRSC resources pumped into this race. 2 Bammer, build the data centers, hard to play catch up once China gets ahead. China constructing more than half the nuclear plants in the world. I don't think that's a good enough messaging justification to get what you want. I mean, It's sort of trying to, instead of talking about the merits and the pros and cons and having a reasonable discussion about the merits of a data center, it's you better do this or this boogeyman's going to come in and do something. I don't think that gets the job done. More on that later in the show. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 1065. Would you please just go away? see. Welcome back to the Jeff Horst Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. Text line, if you want to engage with the program, 251-343-0106. That's how you interact with the program. So it'll come about an hour from now from P2 Public Affairs, our Tuesday regular, Will Hampson. So please make sure you stick around for that. Joining us now from Jefferson County, State Representative Danny Garrett. You may know him. He's the chairman of the Education Trust Fund, the Alabama House of Representatives. Representative, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, trying to deal with a summer cold like everybody else. But other than that, having a good summer.
Yeah, these changes in the atmosphere can will strike in any moment. So hopefully you get better. How's the off season been for you?
It's been busy. We've had a lot of meetings, a lot of conferences. I'm already having meetings about the upcoming budget. So a lot of discussions in preparation for that, discussions with our new administration coming in and trying to, you know, get the lay of the land. So this will be the first time I've gone through a wholesale administration change. So I'm trying to get in front of as many issues as I can.
We'll talk about the budget a little bit, if you would. We keep hearing maybe there's a slowdown in store. Obviously, there was a lot of federal money kind of sloshing through the system. And, you know, the day is going to come when, you know, maybe the wish lists don't necessarily all get granted. Where are we kind of on that continuum?
I think the best way to look at the budget is if you look at the amount of supplemental budget, because when you look at the money that comes in that's earmarked that goes to the various, education institutions, you look at what we put in reserves, you look at what we put into advancement technology, what's left over is the supplemental appropriation. You know, at the height of COVID money coming in, we had $2.8 billion in supplemental. That was way off the chart. But about 3 years ago, the supplemental was $600 million. And again, this represents what's money that's left over after you've done everything you have to do statutorily to comply with the law. The $600 million, then it went to $500 million. Last year was $419 million. I think this year's supplemental will be closer to $200 million. So what that tells you is that the revenues have stabled off like we expected. We put some measures in to limit our budget growth, but I think that supplemental picture tells you that we're still in good financial shape. We'll still have some funds left over, but we're back to kind of a more normal situation.
Well, a new administration, the governor will submit budgets, and do you expect many changes in this in the overall kind of outlook process? Does it seem like, there will be changes from Ivy to Tuberville for sure, but mm-hmm. We haven't really, I don't get a sense that this is really kind of something they really, really want to radically change.
The budgets. Well, I think they're going to come in with a lot of ideas about how we can make government more efficient, about different things they want to do with the with their priorities, and I look forward to those conversations. So I don't think it will be just business as usual. I expect there'll be some new ideas and a lot of discussion. So I look forward to having those. This is again the first year of this administration change, so we'll have a budget come to us before. We have to have a budget from the governor on the second day of session. So we'll have to step through how this is going to navigate, how this change will happen, but I don't expect it with business as usual.
Well, let's talk about some other things kind of going on. There's actually a lot going on in the state political world with you guys out of session. I guess first, there's sort of a populist sentiment out there. And I I'm sure you're aware of it up in your locality. You're talking about data centers and flock cameras, and we got solar farms. There's these things that seem to be really getting people engaged. Sort of got them very engaged on the tail end of the primary cycle, and I think had an impact on maybe a race or two. But it seems like kind of talking to some of your colleagues, they're looking at doing some things, be it data centers or flock cameras for this upcoming session.
Well, I think we'll have a lot of discussions. I think we've got a pragmatic, what's workable. AI is the genie out of the bottle. You can't put it back in. We have to figure out how to navigate that world. And I think what the sense I get is that we'll have discussions and we'll probably find some ground that a middle ground that I think is practical and in both of those areas. So I think the idea that we would just go all in with no restrictions or that we would have none of that to me is not realistic, but I think we will have those discussions.
Well, I think on the data center question, and the county commissioners have, you know, commission associations push back a little, trying to get a one size fits all is something that they don't seem to be really too keen on. But maybe at minimum, there could be some guardrails or at least some requirements that, you know, yes, this is private property and we had to try to maintain some semblance of private property rights. I get that.
I think all those are fair game. But I think at the end of the day, with the AI that's out there in the world, where do we want that data stored? I don't want it stored in China. But I don't want to, you know, again, infringe upon property rights either. I think there's a reasonable answer here. Right now, people are just kind of, I think, going to extremes. But we'll figure out, I think, what makes sense and what's fair and reasonable. Of course, I think we just have to have those discussions.
The other one, the flock cameras, and Sarah Orr was very, I guess, early on this, and you know, 4 or 5 years ago, but that maybe it wasn't such an issue back then. Now you're starting to see more and more of these cameras in communities, and especially in rural places, and you know, there's a constitutional discussion that's going on, but. There's also this discussion, is this really the way we want government to go down this path? And a lot of people are raising objections. What's your take on that?
I think we have to make a distinction between surveillance and security. And I think that's the discussion we have to have. I think certainly there's a place for flock cameras that have been helpful with law enforcement and solving crimes, and I know it's been very important. At the same time, I think Senator Orr raised some great points, and I don't think we want a society that's where the government is surveying every, you know, intensive surveillance on everyone. But you know, and you hear the anecdotal things. But my wife and I were talking the other day about a little thing you can do on your phone and just ask your phone to describe you to somebody who doesn't know you. And they're doing that based upon, I guess, listening to what we say. You know, we were having a conversation about a trip we were about to take, and within 10 minutes, we were getting ads for where we were talking about going. So I think there's a lot of things like that are concerning. We have to manage those things as well. But we can't, I think, just not equip our law enforcement with the tools they need to compete in that world or to function in that world. So, again, I think there's the constitutional concerns about government surveillance, infringement on rights. I understand that, and we need to deal with that appropriately. But I think to just say we're not going to have them, I think, is a disadvantage for law enforcement. And, we occasionally you'll see a bad actor in a police force. We don't do away with the police force. I think same with ICE. You know, occasionally you may see a bad actor in ICE, but we don't do away with that program. We have to put the guardrails in and make sure there's accountability. So, again, I think there's some pragmatic discussions to be had and some solutions we can find.
Joined by State Representative Danny Garrett here on the program. And I was talking to one of your colleagues earlier in the show about this, but it's kind of an extension of the whole discussion about flock cameras and data centers. But just maybe it was kind of comes out of COVID, just a general distrust of these elite institutions. And that includes state government, I would think, and try to restore that trust because, you know, maybe at one time people would have looked at flock cameras and said, hey, if this is going to make me safer in my community, I'm not going to raise a big fuss about this. You're always going to have some chronic malcontents out there. But the difference here this time around, it does seem like, well, you are trying to do this during COVID or you were trying to do this during, you know, XYZ, whatever. And to me, like restoring trust in government, and maybe it's not even because of what goes on at the state level, it goes on at the federal level, but, you know, people in their minds is all sort of one entity. It's going to take like restoring that trust in some way.
I agree. In this Flock Camera discussion, again, we haven't met to discuss this as a legislature, but I go to church on Sundays and I hear from a lot of people, and I have a lot of people who came up and said, look, those things are helpful to us. So they make us feel secure. We like those. Then you find the others who I think that the distrust of government is obviously a concern and something that we need to be aware of as we deal with these issues. But I don't think they represent everybody, at least not the people that approach me.
Something else, and you've been very active in this arena, the divisive concepts law, mm-hmm. and you see it from time to time, something will kind of crop up out of nowhere. And I think these agencies are trying their best to adhere to the spirit of the law, at least, but there's still a lot of things and you see it on a daily basis where you thought this divisive concepts law, at least as it pertains to education, would have solved a lot of these issues, but we're still seeing them. Is that something that needs to be tweaked? Is it a penalty thing? Or because my understanding of that law is, okay, you better follow the law or you face funding cuts. And, but you could cut their funding anyway, even without the law. It's just that a lot of these schools, 4-year schools, K-12, whatever, are kind of going into this kicking and screaming.
Well, I'll say I listened to your show on Friday in anticipation of maybe having this discussion today, and I heard a lot of the comments made. So a couple points I want to make is, one, I think from where we started several years ago, we've come very, very far. I mean, just for one example, University of Alabama eliminated 300 programs that were in violation of the DEI law. Now, that begs the question, how did we ever get to the point they had 300 programs that were doing, going down that road? That has to do, I think, with the total abdication of what was going on in academia to the woke agenda. And I think we've been trying to correct that. So we're trying to turn a barge in some respects, but I will say that every university president, save for a couple that we've spoken with, Chairman Orr and I've talked with, and others in the legislature have talked with, have been on board with this, and they've done things. We've eliminated those departments. You won't find safe spaces on campuses. You've already seen changes in course catalogs and free speech events and all of that. In the middle of all this backdrop, we've had a lot of lawsuits. And to my knowledge, every lawsuit that's been filed against the law has been ruled in favor of upholding the law. We've seen personnel changes in universities, and there'll be some more changes. We've seen structural changes. We had the University of Alabama come to us asking us if we could eliminate the requirement they have a school of social work. They haven't eliminated the school of social work yet. I'm not sure they will. They may or may not, but they've made changes in that program. And so I think there's a lot of discussions we have every time I hear about one of these things where there's a violation, we investigate. But another thing we did last session that you didn't want to talk about on Friday was the bill that Representative Stubbs carried, which was basically gutted, if you will, the ability of faculty senate to control what's going on in the institutions. It puts the curriculum, the responsibility for curriculum and course study at the boards of trustees and the administration, makes the faculty senates advisory only if they exist, and also requires a tenure review policy at each institution. And about 3 weeks ago, we had about 30 of the of board members and college presidents came to Montgomery, met with the speaker, Representative Stubbs, and I to discuss this bill because it takes effect October 1. And already we've seen Auburn and Jacksonville State disband their faculty senates. University of Alabama passed on Friday a resolution that clarified that faculty senates do not speak to the university. They are only advisory, and the role is only advisory. And they also set up, as these other institutions are setting up, policies for tenure review. And tenure review policy means a professor who doesn't measure up can lose their tenure or can be terminated. So what I'm saying is the urgency we have to see to have this addressed is important. We've seen we had a statement came out this morning about a problem with the Department of Early Childhood. I spoke to the governor's office this morning. A lot of the appointments made to the boards we saw this library board with other appointments, are made by conservative people, and yet sometimes these boards go awry. And I think part of that is being these board members are taking advice of national organizations that you can't trust anymore. So I think we're, and we passed a law last session that allows the appointing authority to recall a person they appointed if they're not doing the job that they were, appointed to do. So I guess what I'm saying to you is that this is an urgent issue to the legislature. It's important. We have a lot of ways we're addressing it, and we're going to continue to address it. Chairman Orr and I are talking about outcome-based funding for the higher ed universities, and part of that bill will have the same requirement. If you're not in compliance with the law, then you will not have the opportunity to participate in that type of funding. So we're not seeing a lot of resistance at the administration level or the board of trustee level. Yes, at the faculty level we are. And that's something we're going to have to deal with and work through. But it's important to the legislature, and we continue to see it through.
Well, and one last question before we get you out of here on that, then that seems to be the rub. A lot of these administrations are trying to be very delicate with the faculty, and maybe they have their reasons, and you don't want to revolt from within. And then, but to me, that part of the calculus, maybe it shouldn't matter as much, but, kind of a peek behind the curtain here. When you talk to these guys at these schools and their spokesmen, they will say, Hey, give us more time, give us more time, give us more time. And then, the sense of urgency doesn't necessarily seem to be with the member institutions.
Well, I think that's why we passed this bill that we're dealing with faculty senates and the tenure that takes effect October 1. By October 1, and we told this group that met with us a few weeks ago, we expect every university to have those policies in place by October 1. I guess what I'm saying is we're seeing good reception from the administration and the trustees around the state. But to your point about urgency, that was just another way that we're reinforcing how we want this to be addressed. And it's, they're going to continue to be things that pop up. And I'll just tell you that in the academic world, I bet you 90% of the faculty is left, and, very far left, many of them far left. And we've got to work through that. So this is a start. This is one way we're doing it, and we're cleaning it up what we can with the curriculum and whatnot. Now we're a lot of administrations had just abdicated kind of too much to the faculty senate. It's clear in the law now that they can't do that. That any issue is responsibility, and the person accountable will be the trustees and the administration. And I think that's all positive. And again, that law will take effect October 1, but they're already changing their policies prior to that.
Representative, we got to get out of here. We're out of time, but thanks for hopping on this morning.
Sure. Thank you.
Danny Garrett, ladies and gentlemen, we got to get a timeout in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Laughing at the late night show.
I need my rest, but if I don't stay up all night, sleep all day, I ain't at my best. Hey! Yes, we are beer drinkers. Yes, we are hell raisers. People get out of our way wherever we go.
Come into your life like I do every night from the heart of Uranio. I play a little sad and I play a lot of glad and a few old song. Here's open everybody out in radio land. Find the love just as true as mine. Good night, angel. Sleep tight, darling. And close your pretty
bright. Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning, 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the program, hit me up on that text line and we'll do our best to respond. Jeff, if you did not have the south side of Chicago, the National Guard would not have gone to Chicago. Mobile did not Pritchard, the National Guard would not have come to Mobile. The proximity, if there's crime in Pritchard, there's crime in Mobile. But there's law enforcement mechanisms in Mobile. It's not a question of the crime. You're right. The crime is a constant. Now, the levels of crime are different because there are deterrents. And the deterrent in Mobile versus Pritchard is there's a functioning municipal government with a functioning police force. So it's not, Chicago's one giant entity, but the this itself, you know, I don't think it's like Trump's going to call in the National Guard to come to Pritchard. I think this is more of a Tommy Tuberville thing when he takes office, and he's got to look at, like, Bessemer. He's got to look at Selma. He's got to look at Pritchard as places that need some help, and how are you going to do that? 251-343-0106 will return, and shortly, this is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.